Hey, pull out
I did have it.
I want to see the 23 real quick. Pull out the 23.
Oh, my 23 is not open. I can tell you that. Every other Pappy is open right here except the 23.
Let me see the 20 right now. For your viewers, I want you to take a little taste.
Oh, you want me to? That's straight from the bottle.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it.
Why not? See, this is the thing. So I was in, you know, I was a fraternity in college, and I didn't do well with peer pressure. So I'll pretty much do anything that everybody cheers me on to do. So
chug the whole bottle.
Get it, yeah, boy.
You brought a counterfeit bottle to my derby party.
I did. I did do that. That was before counterfeiting was cool, though. Hey everyone, the podcast is still continuing to grow, and I have to say thank you to our Roundtable bloggers for making that possible. These guys do an incredible job of bringing good banter and even better information to the show. So make sure you're following Blake from Bourboner, Nick and Jordan from Breaking Bourbon, Kerry from Suburbia, and Brian from Sippin' Corn. This episode will feature a big reveal that happened in the secondary market. There's no closure to this story yet, but hopefully we'll talk about it at another episode at some point soon. This, of course, is done on a live stream, and we hit 120 followers at one point. It's a new record for us. And after we ended the show, lots of people stuck around, and some fun stuff took place. You know, we all gave out bottle samples of bourbon to whoever could answer trivia questions, and it was a fun way to wrap it up. So catch the unedited footage on YouTube, and we're going to trickle them out through Facebook from time to time as well. Please remember to keep those iTunes reviews coming. I was able to read some new ones this week, and I was touched to see some of the kind remarks. Thank you to all those very much who have taken the time out to do that. Remember to tell all your friends about this podcast to help spread the bourbon love. You know, we're looking for partnerships, and if you own a small business, a large business, or if you're part of a PR or marketing company that could use this podcast to get in front of 10,000 bourbon geeks per show, go to bourbonpursuit.com and click on the Partner With Us tab. For those who haven't checked out the new website yet, go there and you can sort all the podcasts by distillery, whiskey women, master distillers, and of course, the roundtables themselves. Enjoy this week's episode. Welcome back to the episode of the Bourbon Pursuit Podcast, the official podcast of bourbon. We have got the 9th edition of the Bourbon Community Roundtable. This is always a crowd favorite, and tonight we've got a good subject, I think, that is sort of timely. Some of our guests thinks it's after its time, but you know what? We're gonna do it anyway because I think it's going to be fun, and it's going to be, I think it's something that, you know, as we start diving into it, it's going to make you start thinking twice about a lot of the stuff we always do buy. So with that, I want to go around the horn real quick and start off with Blake. Just kind of tell everybody who you are, where you blog, and your favorite kind of cheese.
Oh, favorite kind of cheese. Threw a curveball at us. I'm Blake from bourboner.com. You can find me on, let's see, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Bourboner, B-O-U-R-B-O-N-R. Favorite kind of cheese? We're going to go with sharp cheddar tonight. That sounds like a good choice.
Very American.
All right, Brian.
Yeah, this is Brian with Sippin' Corn, S-I-P-P apostrophe N, corn. Mostly find me on Twitter at Sippin' Corn. Then I've got the Google blog, so it's Sippin' Corn at Blogspot. And definitely Smoked Gouda.
Ooh, that's a nice one.
Ooh, nice choice.
It pairs well with bourbon.
This is Jordan from Breaking Bourbon. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon at Breaking Bourbon. And make sure to sign up for our email newsletter and look at our daily calendar update.
Awesome. And then if we can get Kerry away from his PS4 for a second, he might be able to chime in. What's going on, Kerry?
What's up, guys? This is Kerry from Suburbia, S-U-B-O-U-R-B-I-A. You can find me on Twitter and Facebooks and the Instagrams. And my favorite kind of cheese is the ones that are constantly posted in the Bourbon R Facebook group.
That was a setup.
Well done.
That was a setup.
Yeah. We've been playing that one all night.
Talking. Yeah.
And actually, I actually forgot to do it. You know, it's this is the first time Ryan's been back in a little bit. So, Ryan, welcome back to the show again.
Yeah. Took a few week hiatus, been on vacation, so I'm glad to be back. Excited for this roundtable. It's a lot of fun.
Good. How was vacation?
My favorite cheese is Aruba. Was awesome. Got some awesome rums. Gambled a lot, lost a lot, but had a great time.
typically how it goes.
But despite that, rum awesome. Hunting is much easier in Aruba than bourbon hunting is here.
So you didn't say your favorite kind of cheese as well before we get kicked off here.
Velveeta.
Velveeta.
You can't beat that.
Man.
Cheese product.
I guess I'm just gonna go with pepper jack because like it's just good on everything for me. I don't know. So we want to kind of get this started, and we have one topic for tonight, and this one topic is a very, very big one. And this kind of happened just a few weeks ago. So I've got my my script here in front of me, and we're gonna kind of go through this, and it's gonna have a few different parts to it. So we're gonna break this out into three different segments. So on June 14th, the bourbon internet broke, in my opinion. I remember going to bed. I looked at my phone. It was probably about 11 p.m. And then I didn't put it down for almost an hour or two. It's just the comments just kept scrolling and scrolling. And as I said, this is kind of a long story here. So we're breaking down this into three parts. So here we go. Part one. How it started. Brandon Priest, a longtime seller on the secondary market, admitted to buying empty bottles on eBay, refilling them, resealing them, and selling them as new. I'll let the people who did the sleuthing remain anonymous here, and we'll just refer to them here going forward as A&A. Brandon provided elaborate excuses, claiming he had bought a number of what he thought were real bottles from a man in Chicago, who, of course, was now unfindable, in two deals that went down in Indianapolis back in the January timeframe. After letting him toil over for a few days, A&A had all their direct evidence ready. It was presented to Brandon. A&A had his eBay account, the empties he bought, the photos of the same exact bottles that were now full and new, owned by his unsuspecting customers. Brandon at first denied everything, but he eventually confessed. He intentionally defrauded people, and frankly, A&A had planned to tear him apart in public. Instead, A&A spent hours talking with him, trying to figure out what he should do from there. Brandon offered to make things right as best he can. He has already issued some refunds and says he will do so for anyone else who has received a fake. He asked that his family won't be harassed, his property damaged, his business destroyed, and whatever other retaliatory acts people may be contemplating. As it turns out, dozens of the empties he bought are actually still sitting at home on his bar. They're refilled, but they're still open, apparently just to show off to guests as his bar stock. A&A asked him to destroy those and provide proof. A&A asked to not have everybody panic over all the bottles that were out there. And, you know, if you bought a bottle from Brandon the past 6 months, it was either a wax or a plastic seal or a plain, just a tax stamp. It could possibly be fake. He did actually sell mostly real bottles. You okay there, Ryan?
No, I bought one. No, I'm kidding.
A&A had been working with him to verify the individual bottles he faked. Now, the one thing that everybody has to keep in mind here is that Brandon Priest had been selling bottles consistently. It's like almost every week for years. He had mules at Liquor Barn raffles, mules at Willet runs. He paid people to stand in lines. Rumors automatically began swirling that his sales were in the upwards of around like $100,000. Of course, and without question, everybody began to look at their bottles from previous purchases. In the span of almost 48 hours, people were looking at bottles such as their Four Roses Small Batch Limited Editions and noticed that the film seemed off, like it was almost done with a hairdryer. Others brought out tax stamp bottles, and there was even a rumor that he went as low as counterfeiting a lost profit orphan barrel. So before we get into parts two and three, where he digs himself even deeper, you know, the community just went up in arms and were asking for his head. I kind of want to push it out to you all and kind of figure out, like, what was your initial impression when you first saw this?
Wait, you mean to tell me that this has been bad because he refilled it with bad stuff?
Wasn't 30,000 bottles of it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was busy.
Oh man, I think my first impression was I'm surprised it took this long. Quite honestly, like truly, I realized that majority of people in the bourbon community are really good individuals, right? And I think everyone really is, and it's just for the game and love of bourbon, and no one wants to screw people over. But I mean, it's just a reality of modern day life. I'm really surprised it took this long for someone to try and game the system. And it's a shame. It's truly a shame.
Well,
yeah.
Well, he's certainly not the first, though.
No, I guess. Yeah,
right. He's just the first. Right. I mean, when you buy something from a dude on it, I mean, it's buyer beware all the way around.
Yeah. And that's, I think it was just like one of the most shocking, unsurprising things, if that makes sense. You know, when we're talking about thousands of dollars and a lot of these things, if we're being realistic, you know, I guess this is all allegedly, but allegedly he didn't do a good job faking these things, but they wouldn't be that hard to fake if you really look at some of the wax stuff and that kind of thing. So when we're talking about thousands of dollars and you have new drinkers coming into the market all the time who aren't, as savvy as some of the other guys, it's not surprising, but it is a little shocking to see it actually go down. If you've ever watched the Netflix Sour Grapes,
yeah,
it's like rewatching that on a much smaller scale. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's just it is shocking.
I mean, so, I guess that did anybody at one point think that like, nah, it can't be true? Like everybody's, I mean, he's been around forever. He's most of his bottles that he sold, which I mean, I can remember, even if it was at Willett, when he made these runs, he would buy them. I mean, this was back when they were $10 a year, so $120 bottle. And he would sell them for like, I don't know, $180, $160. He was like the Walmart of bourbon, right? So it didn't seem like he was making a huge profit off it. It was more like he was doing off of volume. So I found it really odd that he was doing this. I almost kind of didn't believe it at first.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
When you on people who are consistently on secondary markets, you know, like all of us who get bored at work and want something to do, you see sellers that always have expensive bottles. Always. I mean, they're, you know, that every once in a while you can always predict they're going to have 6 or 7 in, or they're going to have some Old Turkey bottles. And I've always said to myself, how do these guys get these bottles? How is it that they keep getting all of this Pappy, all of this antique, all of these old bottles, you know? And at some point you think to yourself, like, is there a pipeline somewhere coming from another country? Is there somebody that's going to all these estate sales that we don't know about? Because I go to estate sales and I don't find anything but old little mannequins and stuff. Like, these people, you know, you start to wonder at some point, like, how do these guys consistently have this same really rare bourbon all the time? And I guess we found out how one guy did, right?
Yeah. I guess I was a little surprised. I mean, I watched Sour Grapes, and when I watched it, I was like, man, this is probably going on in the bourbon world, but bourbon prices aren't as expensive as like the wine. So it's like for a few $100 or $1,000 to do this whole faking and whack, you know, buying ball. I was just like, man, that's just got to be a lot of work that I would not do, but I'm lazy. So I was just surprised.
I was more nervous about his initial statement, which was he bought them from a guy in Chicago. Just so happens that back in January, I bought a bunch of old dusty bottles from a guy in Chicago. So I'm thinking, oh, no, you've got to be kidding me. So maybe I was a little more relieved whenever it came out it was actually true. But
I don't know that I was all that shocked. I guess I'm not that engrossed in the secondary market to really, like, I knew his name, but I don't think I was.
You got those total wine points.
What's that?
You got all those total wine points. That we
right. Yeah. I mean, I'm like a modern day bourbon king where like I got all the Beam and all that kind of stuff. but the antique stuff, I just, I don't know. I knew his name, but I didn't know how much he sold until everything went down.
I mean, we always knew he sold stuff because the odd thing is he doesn't drink, right? I guess maybe that should just be like a, I don't know, a red flag. Like, yeah, he's not in it to drink. He's in it to make a profit. Like, that was his whole thing. That was his MO from the very beginning, right? So I guess that kind of goes back into part of why it went this far, right? Another thing that people are wondering, and Brian, this is more going to be directed to you because for anybody that doesn't know, Brian is an actual real life lawyer, like in real life when he's not talking about bourbon, right? So people were just wondering, like, from a legal standpoint, you know, are you able to take this to the authorities? Like, is this something that you can get for either grand theft or fraud or anything like that?
You can't take to the authorities and sue in a civil case. So you got two kinds of cases. You got civil and criminal. You're not going to be able to sue him in civil court because you can't enforce an illegal contract. And this is an illegal contract. It's if you buy something that's fake, it's maybe it's fraud because you're not supposed to be selling. It's like, you know, if you're not in Colorado or some of those states, it's like suing your your pot dealer for selling your oregano. You can't do it. Same thing with spirits. He could be looking at criminal liability, though. Statute, the first sale is a Class B misdemeanor, then the second sale is a Class A misdemeanor, and then the third is a Class D felony for each sale. Ooh. So, you know, I know there's people who are pushing for criminal investigations, and they want the, you know, everyone always says get the feds involved. You know, that's not.
No.
I mean, I guess the next question to even kind of think about that, and I'll direct it to some of the other guys, like, is it even, I think it would probably be a bad thing to even alert authorities about this, because you're basically just shining a flashlight right on what we all do every single day while we're bored at work, right? Looking at secondary markets.
Right.
It's right. Not a lot.
Well, no, but you're highlighting it to a greater extent than what we are even right now, right?
By what? Bringing a criminal case about it?
Yeah, if you were to take it to authorities and be able to say, this is the guy that conned X amount of dollars and whatever, and then they have to know exactly where it happened, and you have to have some sort of paper trail to prove it. Like I said, you're shining a big flashlight on what we're all a part of.
I mean, it's illegal, right? Like buying bourbon not sold by a retailer in the United States is illegal. Am I right about that, Brian? Like, hey, I want to report somebody who scammed me during an illegal purchase. Like, are they really going to give a shit?
Exactly. You can't, you know, you're not going to do one. You're not going to do that. Two, you can't sue on it because it's first place.
Yeah.
So Catch-22 said, what about fraud as a collectible item, but not necessarily the bourbon itself? I mean,
that's fair.
Basically you see that on Craigslist ads today, right? It says sold for, yeah, collectible only, not for the contents inside.
Hold on, y'all are drinking this stuff? I thought it was all collectible bottles we were talking about.
all these are sealed behind me, right?
It's the artwork on the bottle.
It's like your wreath in the background. You know, they're all accessories.
Yeah, I think Jordan, in your post from a year ago, that good piece with.
I think I'm not sure if he's what post, if he's referring to our. The write-up that we did on the bourbon secondary market solution, which touches upon just, you know, the whole nature of a solution, but also like the current market that we're dealing with. Maybe, I don't know. But I think just wrapping it back to the conversation, you know, my personal opinion, I don't think when people are worried about reporting to the authorities, I think collectively everyone involved in the secondary market isn't so much afraid of getting in trouble. I think it's the fact that they're worried that their form for selling bottles would get shut down, right? Because let's be real, this isn't going to stop anyone. People are going to keep doing it. They're just trying to figure out what's the easiest way for them to do it on, right? No matter what medium it is. So I think that's what everyone's really worried about. Not getting in trouble, just losing their quick source to flipping bottles.
I think they'll always be a source.
Yeah, for sure.
They can close one. They'll always be a source.
And so here's another thing with it, right? You know, if you looked at his Facebook profile and you kind of, you know, I was quote unquote friends with them on Facebook because I had actually bought bottles off him before. But here's the thing. I mean, it didn't look like he needed money, right? He's here from in Louisville. He has a great job. He's a real estate broker. He has pictures from him being at courtside games, multiple Super Bowls, drove a really nice car. Like, what gives? Like, what's the point? I mean, you think it was just greed at this point?
I mean, I'd just say about that, and Jordan can probably jump in too. Sometimes the guys who pull up in the nicest cars, you get to their tax return and you say, maybe they shouldn't be driving that car. So, just from seeing the inside of people's finances, it's not always the guy with the flashy stuff who actually has the money. You know, the saying goes, if you have to say it, it's probably not true. So if you're signaling to everyone how rich and luxurious your life is, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. So I don't know. I feel like that's a slippery slope too. Maybe you have a few good years, then all of a sudden things are getting tight, so you sell some fake bottles, allegedly. And, you know, I think it's just you kind of get stuck in that cycle of, oh, man, what am I going to do? Maybe Will, it was getting harder to get, and camping out at all these places were getting harder to get, and it was just trying to find a quick and easy solution. So,
yeah, Michael,
yeah, for sure. I'll go ahead.
Now, I'll say Michael Barnes said maybe bourbon isn't the only thing he's scamming at this point.
Yeah, you never know.
For sure.
So, Jordan, what are you going to say?
I'm just going to say it's one of those things, too. For some people, it's just never enough, right? Like, it doesn't matter how much they have. They always just want more. Right. So whether he was flashy with no substance behind it, or maybe he actually did have it and he was just caught up, and to him, it was the game, right? That was what he got off on, just getting more and more and more, no matter the cost. That's the crappy thing, because self-doubt, and like everyone else is selling bourbon, now everyone has self-doubt about it. It's just, it's a crappy thing to inject into the system.
I agree. Go ahead, Ryan.
With the new state law that passed here that, liquor stores can, or I mean, sorry, bars and restaurants can buy vintage, you know, to sell at bars and stuff. When they do those transactions, are those legal, or, you know, through those secondary markets, or and how much more is this going to incentivize to fake?
Yeah, unless I'm going to get choppy again here. So that just the Kentucky vintage law statute just passed, and they're working on the regulations for it to define what's vintage. You know, is vintage because you can't get it now, or is it from the real Old Taylor distillery? You know, does it have to be discontinued in that way? So they're still working on that, but it's going to be up to those retailers who buy to verify buying something legitimate. And that's actually, I posted about a year ago my proposal to have the clearinghouse where you give that kind of license to a retailer to make sure you've got something authentic. So I think that's essentially what's going to happen. I mean, that opens up the secondary market, and it gives us some assurances legitimate instead of buying from some guy on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as you said, I don't know if the vintage law, all those pieces to it, have been evaluated yet. That says what is, I mean, how are you going to determine if the bottle is real or not? Or you know, do you have to bring a piece of paper that has the genealogy of the bottle from past history of transactions, right? Like, I don't know what that's going to look like. And honestly, I think, you know, when this whole thing went down, don't get me wrong, there's already bar owners here in Louisville that are buying up stocks. I mean, they are going nuts right now in secondary markets and buying absolutely everything they get their hands on, because they know prices are going to go up. I mean, there's a few names that you'll see in the forums every single day, and they buy things by the truckload because they know that they're going to have a full bar of stuff that they can be able to sell here in the next year or two at a considerable premium as well. So it is definitely going to be on them to do their due diligence of being able to figure out what does it mean to be able to, you know, is this bottle real or not? So that there definitely is a big if there.
Yeah. So like, when you go to Jack Rose, do you trust that what they're serving you is real? And I think the answer is going to be yes. You know, they've got a trusted name. You know, you go there and there's what, 27,000 bottles, or what the number is. And retailers start up under the vintage law, and as bars stock up, it's going to be a trust game. And as soon as there's any sniff that they're selling you in a Pappy 20 bottle, then they're done. I mean, what this shows is that the bourbon community is quick to react.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, that's one of the questions I didn't, you know, kind of throw it out here, is that, you know, in this part one, you know, everybody was very much ready to just start taking off his head. I mean, just basically ready to just start going at him. However, the people who did the sleuthing asked people to just hold still for a little bit, like, let us figure this out. I mean, would you have been level-headed enough to be able to do that? Or would you just said, you know, I got screwed, fuck this, like, let's tear them apart? Because there's a lot of idiots out there, like, let's be honest, right? Like, there's more people in these secondary markets than there are, you know, I guess you can say the intelligent people enough that would be able to have a level head to be able to do it.
Wait, what's the question again?
I mean, would you have had a level head?
Kerry just knocked out a quick mile on the treadmill in the background, so he
didn't hear the last question. Somebody said it had third world internet, so I had to put a switch and a router and get a wire over here. So I was doing some IT work. Anyway.
Well, welcome back. And by the way, we should also just go ahead and give ourselves a pat on the back. We have just eclipsed 116 viewers. So we have finally beaten 100 viewers live on the roundtable.
I want to thank every member of my family who tuned in.
All 116 of them.
Yeah.
All right. So back one more question. I'll throw this in a different direction. So there's something, you know, some of these forums, they have a rule in place that after you sell something that you can't delete a post. However, his were always deleted. So is that another thing that you just, I mean, immediately just more red flags are being raised, yet nobody seemed to really notice at the time?
I wouldn't have noticed.
He's a scumbag. Like, he scammed people. He knew he scammed people. He's gotten off the hook. He's written a formal letter of apology for it. But if he hadn't been caught, he would have kept doing it. So I don't know why people are even paying him attention. Don't buy from him again. He's he's a scumbag. He'll always be a scumbag. I mean, no offense to him personally. Any random person. I mean that in a general sense of anybody who feels the need to scam people in any kind of way. If it's Pokemon cards or it's bourbon or it's whatever it is, like you're, you know, taking advantage of the human instinct. Most people are trusting by nature and you're taking advantage of that. And I just think it's fucking bullshit.
I agree. All right. So let's move on. Part two, within 24 hours, he shut down his Facebook account. People started blasting his business on Yelp, Facebook, and Google. The business took down their Facebook pages, and it didn't take long for anybody to find his home address since he had shipped so many packages. Not to mention the Yelp rating went down to 1 star almost immediately. A&A started to refund the process that involved Brandon's cooperation. Brandon also has a full statement to make to apologize to the bourbon community, which we'll read in part three. The community itself was in an uproar and wanted his head on a silver platter. ANA insisted that they are not going soft on him, but they're being practical, level-headed, and extremely wary. Brandon asked that everyone stop the retaliations against his business and his family so that those that posted public messages about him, that they had hopefully deleted him. He knows that everyone was beyond furious and that will be addressed in a statement. ANA said, immediacy is not the priority. Accuracy and thoroughness is. Again, thank you for the cooperation, understanding, and patience. So, I'll throw this out to you, Jordan. Deleting his Facebook account really help the situation here?
I think it's just, you know, add a fuel to the fire. Here's the problem with something like this. It took him, what was it, like 48, 72 hours before he wrote an apology letter. And even then when you read, you know, if you're going to read parts of that letter in part three, it doesn't, at least to me when I read it, doesn't come across as super sincere, right? He still like deflects a lot of like, oh, I didn't do too many bottles. Don't worry. Most of them are at my house. I destroyed the other ones. And it's like, just take my word. Trust me again. It just doesn't work that way. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. The whole thing's just, I have my thoughts on it. I have, you know, and deleting your Facebook page doesn't help anything, right? It just allows people to go after a different forum, whether it's his business or any other public venue that they can find to vent frustration. You know, that was a stupid move on his part. Do I feel bad for him? No, you know, not one bit. Right. Like I said, not only did he inject bottles into the market, but who knows? Like he says he didn't do too many. You can't trust that. And then those get flipped and flipped again. And it just puts this whole self doubt in the whole thing, which is a shame. Because the whole point of this is not to like screw people over. It's just to have a bunch of fun with it.
Right. It's the whole point is to. And also, you know, Four Roses was his big. I think that was one of his big.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will crash the Four Roses market because I'm looking for like 2015. And that was one of the big ones he forged. So looking for those, just throwing that out there. But yeah, you know, it's, I don't know that you can ever fully trust any transaction from someone you don't know. And the thing is, I guess with Brandon, everyone could vouch for him. You know, they would say, can anyone vouch for?
No, I totally agree. I mean, I would have been in the corner of being able to say I could vouch for him. I mean, I bought bottles off him and thankfully mine were legit because I just bought some shelves. I bought some shelf turds, right? So it was just some lower end stuff that I got way less than retail because he just wanted to get rid of them. So that or might have been his first fakes. Who knows? One or the other, right?
Yeah. Really just testing things out.
I'll tell you what, this Russell's rye actually tastes like a rye. So he fooled me.
The bourbon community, even though we rose up and went a little crazy, like, you know, if this was like the drug business and he faked it, like, be a whole different story, but here we are, like, forgiving him and moving on and everything. He gone. So, I mean, it at the end of the day, this is what it is. It's a hobby, right? And we collect this stuff not just for drinking it, but for collecting it too. And to have somebody come in and, you know, kind of throw waves like he did and kind of interrupt everything. I think also that once we get through all the crap of it, the benefit is that I think it makes people more wary and almost even helps, because now you almost have people who are afraid, even the crooks out there, they're going to do this. They're afraid to get caught or screw up or do something to get caught about it. So, you know, I see it kind of both ways too. There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. I can just appreciate the passion of the community to go after him, to go after his business. Cause like, reminds me of UK basketball when that referee, like the roofery, where they, you know, went after and
roofery,
you know, one star reviews. And whatnot. I mean, too far, but I don't know, maybe not. He screwed people over, so you know, that's, it's kind of funny though.
Bartman is still in hiding from the Cub was 12 years ago, so they can do it to Bartman and the Cubs can still win a World Series. Back. Maybe there's redemption. No, even if he deletes his Facebook, does all this stuff, what's it really matter? The problem really was he was putting fake bottles. I don't think there's any reaction after that anybody's going to be like, okay, never mind. Even if he just came out immediately and said, I'm sorry, shouldn't have done this, I'm going to refund you right away, he still would have gotten the same treatment, you know, the fake Yelp reviews, all this stuff. He really kind of buried himself with the fake bottles, and anything after that, just we can kind of critique, but that was really the end of it, you know, once it was proven that he was faking and scamming people.
Well, I'll kind of retort back to that and kind of throw another question back to you there, Blake, because, you know, he's the one sitting there making all the demands of saying, like, you know, don't tear apart my family, don't tear apart my business, like, they're innocent and all this. Do you really think he's in a position to make those demands? Because in my opinion, he kind of still has the upper hand right here. He still has everybody's money. He could just, you know, go away and never be seen again.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, because in reality, his family and business, because, I mean, I don't know much about him or anything, but it sounds like he doesn't own the business. It's kind of his dad's and stuff. So should everyone be held responsible if their son is a screw up, or if, you know, their brother or whatever is a screw up? I don't know. That's a tough call to make. I think people should be aware of what kind of guy he is. And I'm not giving him any slack by any means. Like, hey, if there's a way to bring criminal charges, do it. But, you know, bringing somebody's family and all that, threatening somebody's family or something like that, like, I can't agree with that. But, you know, do whatever you can to get the money back and then put whatever reviews and that kind of stuff out there. But I think getting the people who were scammed repaid is the biggest priority. And all that goes away if this guy feels like he's being threatened and has to go into hiding and that kind of thing. So I assume that's what the intent was, of saying, hey, give him some time. You know, it wasn't like, hey, give this guy mercy. I think it was, hey, give him some time. He says he's going to repay everyone. Let's get that done and then take it from there. So
now, I might be wrong. Maybe I missed it on any of the forums, but I know he's claimed to have refunded people, but has anyone stepped up and said, oh yeah, he 100% refunded me and everything's good?
I've seen someone say that they were refunded.
Oh, they were. Okay.
Yeah. Now, so, it wasn't like somebody I knew or anything, but I saw at least one guy I know of said they were refunded.
So there is a light at the end of the tunnel, I guess, for some people. You know, and at this, and Brian, this might be more directed towards you. You know, at this time, it was rumored that the local news had caught wind of the story, but from what I've seen, nothing has ever aired or anything like that. You know, from a slander point of view, is this something that could have been broadcast on public airwaves? Is this something that is public domain and public knowledge that could do that?
Well, any news outlet's going to want more than just internet rumors, which is probably how they see it. they're going to want something more before they report on it. So that's probably
we are a news organization
on the news.
The Perverter News Network.
Well, now it'll be on the news tomorrow. Now it's on, yeah. Now it's on Bourbon Pursuit. So they'll be calling you tomorrow, Kenny, for a quote.
I got nothing to say. No comment.
Yeah, no comment. Exactly. But that's probably what the news media was waiting on, is they want more than just what they see as online rumors, because they want more than one source, and they want, and back to our initial point, we're going to step up and try to kill the whole secondary market by complaining to the press or complaining to the authorities and trying to get criminal charges against him. I mean, it's just not something that's going to happen.
I know someone who was contacted by the news channel.
Really?
Yeah, he was.
Over this story?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was one of the ones who was affected, and the anchor sent him a PM. And
he says no comment, right?
Exactly.
So
Ron Burgundy.
So they contact.
We all know what happened to snitches. So
yeah, they contact 50 people, and 50 people who bought from him are going to say no comment, because they don't want to say that they've bought on the secondary market. They don't want to be the one who's responsible for bringing it down.
I just snitched on the snitch. I may look out for horse heads in my bed.
That's right.
Which, I mean, and with everything, you see like the random thing pop up, and I feel like Pennsylvania is the only state that seems to be cracking down on the people selling on Craigslist.
Crack down hard here. Crack down hard.
And you know, so there is always a little bit of that, but I don't know. I feel like the fear is minimum. But even if I did get ripped off, I still wouldn't go on the news and be like, "Yeah, this guy tried to sell me a Pappy Van Winkle."
This was unbelievable. Let me tell you. I also tried my fake weed from him, and it was not even real.
It was
oregano. I'd put on a Bourbon Pursuit T-shirt and just say, "Hey, Kenny Coleman here."
That's the best way to get away with it. Secondary markets. I've got friends that are police officers that are in those groups, and they don't care. They'd rather buy bourbon. They don't care, right? Like in Louisville, it's not like a high crime. Like nobody gives
it's
a shit.
It's not an arrestable offense. I mean, no one's going to do it.
Yeah.
And the nice thing at least in Kentucky, as far as I can interpret, and it's not legal advice, all those disclaimers, you can buy. It's not illegal to buy on the secondary market. It's only illegal to sell. So everyone who's kind of skitzed out about this because they bought from him, maybe doesn't have too much to worry about, but they probably sell too, and they don't want the whole market to go under.
So you heard that from a lawyer. So
you heard not this legal. Is not legal advice.
Handle on the law.
To put a big asterisk.
To pay a prostitute, but it's illegal for a prostitute to accept the money.
Right.
Got it.
Is that right?
Yeah, friend just asked.
Yeah, ask you for a friend.
What about drugs? Is it illegal to buy drugs, but the drug dealer gets in trouble if he accepts the money? Is that...
Somehow I feel like those are all twisted. Maybe we need Brian as our lawyer if we get in trouble.
we just pay him in fake bottles then.
Yeah, And look at Kenny's shelf, and I'll take some of those as a retainer.
Yeah, I bet you would. Yeah. So, you know, to salvage his family business, you know, Brandon also went on a Yelp and he made a review himself, and he said, "There's some people out there trying to destroy or quote unquote our business reputation by making false accusations. We have been in business since 1956, and our track record speaks for itself. We helped hundreds of families buy and sell their home. Our business was built around service and integrity." That takes some balls to be able to say something.
It takes a lot of balls, seeing as he made that post before he made his apology letter to the community. So I think that really riled up a bunch of folks in that order too. It's not like he was like, "Oh, let me apologize, then do this." It was, "Let me worry about myself first, and then I'll explain myself to others," which I think was the crux of what really riled people up.
Yeah, I mean, I was honestly surprised when I saw that, and it was just kind of like, man, and it just threw the word integrity out there. I thought that was the key kicker for me.
I feel like I've just become so jaded in my older age, but I just expect people to be very self-serving and just completely ridiculous, because I feel like that's what that statement is. But then again, it's not that surprising that he's going to try to say to the guys he scammed, I'm so sorry, I'm going to pay you back. And then in this other arena, like life is completely separate in the world of the internet, say, nope, this is a very honest.
No, that's my virtual life. Yeah. This is my real life.
But I don't know. It still is just like, you know, that sounds about right. That's like a guy like that would do that. You know, if you're willing to sell fake bottles, you're probably willing to throw that kind of stuff out there as well.
Truth.
All right, so let's move on. Part three. Brandon releases his statement. A&A says Brandon's statement is entirely him. What you see is entirely, or what you see here that I'm about to say is entirely A&A. A&A presented the facts, not passing judgment or offering opinion, so please recognize that as such. A&A is not representing Brandon. A&A is trying to track down fakes and get restitution to those who were defrauded. A&A isn't the law of the government. A&A did this for the benefit of the community and because of their interest and expertise in counterfeit and collectible whiskey. Brandon has so far refunded 9 people at this time since this was uncovered and is working on the 10th to agree a payment for a larger multi-bottle purchase. A&A can confirm that Brandon is working to repay off all those who receive fakes. He has to pull together finances. His restitution to all those received fakes truly does seem to be his goal and achievable, though it may take some time. That is A&A's feeling at this time. A team was assembled to review the fakes, and the team is highly regarded in the community for knowing vintage bottles, and restitution comes directly from Brandon. At this point, A&A has confirmed about 30 fakes, 24 were traded and sold, and 6 were at his home, quote-unquote, sealed. Another couple or dozen so open bottles, refilled but not resealed, were also on display as stock on his home bar. He also bought a small number of red and green tax strips. So they estimate the total fakes is estimated around 16,000. And they figured it may rise around 18 to 20,000. The number of victims is around 20, which also may rise by a few. The uncertainty is because Brandon is often inexact and hard to pin down on details. He has been cooperative, yet sometimes evasive or unavailable. A&A did not suspect this was of a significant larger scale. To help identify fakes and empties and refills, A&A's MO commonly included Brandon asking questions that he already knew the answer to. For instance, when Brandon first sent us a statement, it claimed he didn't fake anything prior to 2017. However, A&A knew this to be untrue, although the vast majority of his fakes were made in 2017. When A&A finally confronted that untruth with evidence to the contrary, Brandon revised the not before date to November 2016. A&A confirms that Brandon was buying empties on eBay as early as November 2016. At this point, no evidence has presented itself that he made fakes prior to then. I think this gets where it's a little funny in my opinion. Brandon destroyed the open, quote-unquote, fake drinker bottles he still had. He had provided before the pictures as well as a video of him smashing them. Since A&A recognized this as a dangerous task, they reminded Brandon to wear protective gear, gloves, thick clothing, eye protection, etc. Brandon chose to wear no protection, ended up in urgent care with injuries to his hand and foot. This included an example of one of the many challenges that caused continued delays and frustrations. A&A concludes they are not here to let him off easy. They are trying to keep this away from law enforcement. They've asked for your patience and cooperation. It was been a very difficult and intensive process. Here's Brandon's statement. I want to formally apologize to everyone affiliated with these groups. This was without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life, and it's something I've had to learn and live with. I understand that admitting my faults and working to make each one right will never be good enough. With the exception of my brother's death, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to go through in my life. Many innocent people that I'm close to are now being negatively affected by this. I would ask that the people focus their hate on me instead of my family or businesses I'm associated with. The problem I'm faced with now is that I was a very active seller in these groups for the past couple of years. I checked my FedEx account and I shipped over 1,200 packages in 24 months. 77% of these packages had more than one bottle. Now, everyone I sold to thinks they received a fake bottle, and I completely understand why. 98.6% of everything I sold was real. I'm hoping that the people will soon see that to be true. What I did was wrong, and by no means am I trying to justify my actions to this message. I've worked with others to confirm fake bottles with whom they went along with a plan and how they will be paid back. I have destroyed any fake bottles I had in my possession. The list of fake bottles isn't nearly as long as you may think. Some of you have already received refunds, and others have been in contact with and committed to a date in which they will receive their refund. I would ask that you all remove all the public messages about me that have been posted, people are posting negative remarks about my company all across the internet. Doing this affects too many innocent people. I know that you want to destroy me, and reading this message may make you want to hate me even more. For me to be accused of selling tens of thousands of dollars of fake bourbon is crazy. I have seen some reviews where I'm being accused of selling hundreds of thousands of dollars in fake bourbon. I would like to apologize for my Yelp post. I was trying to defend the business itself and not my actions. I can see how that would have been misinterpreted. I've removed that post. Telling the truth comes with many consequences, which I'm fully prepared to accept. However, the situation has snowballed and has gotten extremely out of proportion. I've had countless threats, mainly from people that I did nothing to. The few guys that were directly impacted by this have been most forgiving. I've never really been a religious man, but this has made me look to God, as I don't know what else to do. I'm praying every day and hoping that people will view me now for how I handled this, as opposed to what I have done. To the guys that did receive fake bottles, I want to assure you that I will make this right. There are no words that can explain how bad I feel about this. I will not do any good to post factors that led to me doing this. The bottom line is it was wrong. I built a lot of good relationships. This keyword right here is a lot, because he spells it A-L-L-O-T, over the past few years with, again, A-L-L-O-T, a lot of you. And now those relationships have been destroyed. For me, that's my biggest loss. Many of you defended me in the time of need, and I let each and every one of you down. This most of all is having a hard time dealing with. The guys in these groups share a special bond that I can't describe. It was a bond that made these groups so enjoyable to be part of over the last few years. I could have easily denied all these allegations and just disappeared. But in order for me to clear my conscience, I have to make this right. There is no doubt that the biggest mistake I've ever had to fix in my life. I want to emphasize that I'm going to complete the refund process. I want this over, and I couldn't imagine how bad it would be if I could say I could send refunds and it didn't come through. I didn't plan on paying anyone back. I wouldn't even bother responding to the messages I received. I wouldn't bother cooperating in general. I just want to make that clear. My goal is to have 100% of refunds completed by the 4th of July. So just to clarify, there's no confusion. I've already refunded 10 guys. The remaining few will get the refunds by next Friday. I have a plan in place to make that happen. In closing, I hope people use this as an example of what not to do. I really enjoyed getting to know many of you and will miss being a part of the community. You'll never see me in the years to come to sell another bottle of bourbon. In the hours that followed, there was a new 5-star review on Yelp by Cliff B saying that the negative reviews are the furthest thing from the truth. Brandon is a very respected agent. Looks like to me a bunch of drunk bourbon members have spent too much time in their hands. And I speak for a lot of people, A-L-L-O-T, when I say that you will always have our respect. This was easily the most ousted fake review because it was just easy to be able to see in his Brandon because he just can't spell the word a lot. And then the memes just continue from there. So
that's actually the word "allet." It's a Western Kentucky dialect.
Right. How do you spell "allet"?
That's applause. Can everybody just give him applause real quick?
Oh man, I feel like I was back in the classroom right there, right?
Like with Bernie.
So I'm going to make a kid's story, and it's called the Brandon Priest story, and it's just his speech, and I'm going to read it to my kids when I want them to go to bed. A giant bunch of bullshit intended to put someone to sleep. Okay, like let's just go ahead and publish it. Thank you, Brandon, for giving me the source to put my kids to sleep. A complete pile of bullshit. You're a crook. You scammed people. Fuck you. And that's it. That's all I have to say.
So we could tell that Carrie didn't think this was sincere at all. Did anybody get the slightest amount of sincerity out of it?
No,
none whatsoever.
Like Pacino, when he goes and blabs about all his shit, it's like you can't. It's like one ear out the other. You don't listen to it. It's all fake.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jordan.
I was going to say. So you know what actually jumps out? One, I do think the letter's bullshit, and you know some of the comments in the chat. I think the same thing. He shipped, you know, Travis Roberts shipped 50 packages per month for 2 consecutive years, and he's only claiming, you know, less than 1% were fake. But I think what jumps out at me is the fact that he admits, if I was him, I wouldn't be so afraid that I rip people. I'm already, people want to have his head and report him for selling fake bourbons, but he flat out admits to shipping 1,200 packages of alcohol, most likely across all our state lines, which to me, like, is he freaking crazy? I knew he was crazy, but like, that's just absurd. Like, that's the thing I'd be scared about saying out loud to anyone. And there he goes. He's not the brightest guy in town.
That's exactly right. Just ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. A, B, C, and D, right there.
Except it was in the form of some sort of text document in one of these forums that was posted by A&A, right? So,
it's true too. Well, but yeah.
So that's hard to pin down. So, I mean, what do you guys think the verdict is here, right? That they're really only looking at 16 to 20,000. Or you think this is still a very shady situation? I mean, you think really only you think that only 30 people out of 1,200 packages were scammed? Or you think it could be way more than that?
I mean, it's hard to say because, you know, you don't know what happened with the real investigation. Did they say, hey, here's the fake or the empty bottles we know you bought, and so these had to be fake? And he said, okay, yeah, those are the fake ones, nothing else. Or those were just the ones he was caught with. So my guess is it has to be a lot more. I don't think you just all of a sudden – I mean, maybe the community just got lucky and caught him at the very beginning. You know, it is a pretty closely knit and intelligent community. So, you know, maybe we got lucky with that one and dodged a bullet that it's not like 2019 and it's been going on for 2 years. And I don't know. If I had to bet, I'd say there's a lot more out there that is fake and he's just trying to get away with them.
Yeah,
I agree too. I don't think the math and the ratio it evens out. I think that there's probably way more that there could have been. I hope that you're right that this was caught at the very tip of it and would, you know, hasn't been going on for longer than that. You know, it also kind of makes me think that, you know, there's you guys have mentioned sour grapes a few times and how, you know, that's a more sophisticated operation. You know, you think that if he was going to be doing this and thinking of doing it longer term, he may would try to make them like much better fakes, like more legit, right? Because it seems that as soon as people started looking at them, all of a sudden people were noticing all these little consistencies, like the Four Roses film, like not, you know, being completely tight against the yeah, bottle, had all these kind of creases in it, right? So there's a lot of things that he kind of slipped up on himself and was more or less just not being careful about it.
Yeah, I'd say there's a lot more because there's probably a lot of buyers that are like me who don't investigate the bottles and look at the strips and the, you know, the packaging, and I just open it and I drink it, and, you know, that's, you know, so there's probably a lot more.
I think another thing to keep in mind too is, and it kind of reiterates the fact that a lot of people have local groups. Like for me living in Atlanta, there's a large group of people in Atlanta. I'm sure there's people, you know, in Kentucky and elsewhere who have local groups. It's always smarter to trade locally, mm-hmm, especially, you know, when there's somebody you know locally that has a reputation for being an honest person. It just, when you're in a group that has 18,000 people in it, or whether you're on eBay or wherever that group is, and you're trading with that many people, there's bound to be some bad fish in there. But if you stick to local, when there are big purchases that you don't want to make, or you need to offload, I always go local first if I can, because I know people, I build relationships. People who may buy those bottles, they say, hey, come on over and drink them, you know, open them up. I mean, I don't sell bottles, clearly that's illegal, but, you know, like friends of mine who do that kind of stuff, you know, they do it locally.
And you can slash their tires because they're local to you if you found out something wrong with it, right?
Right, exactly. Also, can I just add real quick, Kenny, what's wrong with Sazerac and Eagle Rare 17?
Because they're not open back there.
Do you have a problem with them? I'll clearly take them from you.
I did that on purpose because I knew you'd look at it and you'd get your mouth watering the entire time.
It just makes me mad.
It's because I haven't been over there yet in a while.
Yeah. To open them. Every time Ryan comes over to my house, I end up losing like $1,500.
Well, 1,500 value.
Yeah, exactly. Trade value. So yeah,
trade value.
So one last question I kind of want to throw at you guys here. So once the payments are done and restitution's complete, you know, what happens? Are the floodgates open at that point? Like, do you think that people are just going to let it go? Or do you think it's, you know, as Brandon said, most of the people that have been rude to him aren't even the people that he scammed. It's just people that, you know, just they want to, you know, I don't know. They just want to put their nose in some other people's business. So, kind of like us.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but no. I mean, don't get me wrong. We're not sitting there like,
we're casting the first stone.
Yeah. We're not casting any stones, right? We're just kind of putting the facts and kind of telling the story of what's out there, right? So, I mean, you know, what happens at this point? Do you think people are going to be level headed and let it slide and say, well, you know, I hope this, you know, doesn't happen again, even though we think it probably will, but, or do you think people are just going to go haywire and, You know, I know there's websites where you can send boxes of shit to people's doorsteps.
I mean, the internet is really known for its level-headedness and grace and mercy. So I have a feeling it's going to work out well for them.
You ready for this? I would bet you that of online, I would say 70% of people who are in secondary markets still have no idea who this person is. And therefore, if this person posted a bottle in said secondary market without anybody else saying anything, they would still purchase. Because people, I think, more than not, look at what's being sold as opposed to who the person is. They just don't care, or they just don't know.
Yeah, or he could do a different name.
Without a fake name?
Yeah.
He does it in his own name, and you think he still does it, Kerry?
I think that so many people still aren't that closely tied to it, that still don't know who he is or what he did.
Wow.
I would say a majority still don't.
I mean, it was in a few select, you know, kind of places. So I can understand where there is a large majority who may not know, but I don't know. I think the contrary. I think most people that are in this, or maybe that, I guess you could say that are whiskey geeks or like have nothing better to do with their life except focus around bourbon, they're the ones that all know about it, right? So
true. I mean, like everyone listening in knows about it, but I'm talking about all the people on Bourbon Door.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. We viewers, I mean, who else needs to know about it other than these 126 people?
That's so all there is. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, for me, that last sentence for me was great because that's one less person in Louisville have to worry about getting a bottle in front of me. So
yeah.
There you go.
Well, it sounds like more than one because wasn't he like just paying people to stand in line and everything?
Oh yeah.
Could be five or six.
Yeah. It might be even more than that actually. So
and
yeah,
they'll be replaced with another like 400.
I already know another one that sends more. So you're screwed over there in Kentucky while over here on the East Coast, we're just sitting back like this, just living life, right?
Am I right? We've been through
picking up Saz 18s left and right for you.
Or Rhetoric 23. Yeah.
Or Orphan Barrels, whatever it is.
Yeah, so. We got the new Weller 12 label coming out like it's William LaRue Weller right now.
Jesus. Everyone is going to go crazy. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about secondary markets. Let's just go ahead and bring it up because it's topic. I mean, how crazy has that gotten that a $35 bottle is now $150 bottle shipped?
I mean,
it's unreal.
I got a call from ABC's the store who they're the only ones to get Weller in Florida. And I don't even remember signing up for this list. But they said, guess what? Got something for you. I'm like, oh, man, because they do a lottery for all their Pappy and antique collection. I'm thinking I won the lottery. They're like, Weller 12 just came in, got your name on it. I'm like, I'm excited at first, and then I'm thinking to myself, why am I excited? I mean, I went and bought it. It was $50 for a 175, so I'm not going to turn that down. But
remember when Weller 12 was like sweetener for a deal?
Yeah. Okay, I'll throw
it. That wasn't that long ago either. That was not that long ago.
I went to Weller 12s.
That's when I saved it all.
Yeah, wise man. Why?
There you go.
Crazy.
You know, it's for the price, it's good, but like people just hold this up and like revere this bourbon now. It's like, oh, especially as more people join every day, it's like, oh, Weller 12 got it. It's like the best thing ever. It's like
that and the Weller store picks antiques. It's like,
yeah, that's all there is.
That store picks is even crazier, actually.
Yeah, the 107 store picks. I mean,
I'm
that's
like,
all
why is the party mark $300? Fuck that.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you pay to get something engraved on it, man. That blows it up.
It is 7 year Weller. It's just a little higher proof. I don't care how cool the red label is. It is still 7 year Weller Special Reserve that you pass over.
But have you seen the new labels? They come with a metal screw cap. And
I mean, labels, I fall for it. I mean, it's cool, but come on.
Yeah, I knew just by that small label change.
They knew what they were doing.
It's probably going to be 300 next year at this time or something crazy like that. But
how much is the old label worth now?
Fred Minnick.
That's what I'm thinking.
So I'm moving on to rum. Fred Minnick knows what's up, right?
I mean, but yeah. So has the old label? Is that worth more? Is that what Reed is doing with changing the label every month?
Nobody's selling the old label.
I'm holding on to a bunch of it.
I heard there's a guy in Louisville selling it.
I've got one I got to refill here.
I know a guy.
He can get you a bottle.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I kind of want to close it out there. I think this is a pretty good discussion. I want to say thank you all again for coming on the show tonight. This was fun. I did a lot of reading from a script, but you know, I think it was a way to kind of frame the story and ask the questions as we go along. So thank you everybody for bearing with me along with that. And so Ryan, what'd you think, man? Good night.
Yeah, it was like a interesting dateline, you know. You know, kind of following along, like we needed Lester Holt here to kind of guide us through. Yeah. No, I thought it was awesome. I mean, yeah.
The Chris Hansen.
It's a shame it happened, but we knew it was going to.
This was a Chris Hansen bourbon story.
Yeah.
A predator was caught.
All right, so go around the horn and go around the table one more time. Get everybody an idea of where you blog and where you talk at.
Blake, you're up.
I'll go again. Okay. Blake from bourboner.com. Again, you can find me at pretty much any social media outlet, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I have like one video up on YouTube, so if you want to subscribe there as well. You can do that. It's bourbonr.com.
And Corn, and the non-paid product placement is an Elijah Craig 12-year at 91 proof. And yes, that says Old Pogue on it.
I was going to say, how much have you been drinking tonight, Brian? Yeah. that's the wrong bottle.
It's sourced from Bardstown. It's a 12-year 91.
I thought his internet was choppy, but it's him.
Yeah, I'm chopping. So it's still sourced, and it's $110 for an Elijah Craig 12. As
Old Pogue.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Sipping Corn, SIPP apostrophe N Corn. Find me on Twitter and Blogspot. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, my man.
Cheers. This is Jordan from Breaking Bourbon. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon at Breaking Bourbon. And check out the site for the latest release calendars and reviews.
All right. So first of all, let me start with Breaking Bourbon. The Patreon sounds awesome. I saw the list today.
Thank you.
If you have not signed up for that Patreon, I would definitely, because I am going to impartial outsider. I would sign up for that to get that release calendar. The amount of work
we appreciate into that. Thank you.
Is awesome, and I would love to be the first to get that. So that's awesome. Blake, love you as always, man. I love the Christmas tree in your background. That's awesome.
Afro.
Brian, Sipping Corn, your information that you provide is invaluable, and we love you for that. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
And Kenny and Brian, you guys are cool.
We try.
Thanks, man.
And, Ryan, and I just wish you would drink more Eagle Rare and Sazerac. And this is Carrie from Suburbia, SUBOURBIA. I'm, you know, to the man named Mr. Priest out there, I may have said some mean things about you tonight, but listen, I am all for, no, you're a crook. Fuck you. Don't ever do that again. And I'm out.
Well, thank you, Carrie. Well, and thank you, everybody else. That was awesome. Yeah, well said to kind of wrap that up. You know, if you like what you hear, make sure you tell everybody about the podcast. There's a lot of summer trips that are going on, and you're going to be doing a lot of driving. So a lot of your friends are going to be driving. So tell them to pick up, subscribe to us on iTunes. This is, of course, another video podcast. So you can be able to watch this after it's all nice and cut and edited on Facebook. So make sure you follow us on Facebook as well. And we'll be pushing out all kinds of good pictures and stuff like that on Twitter and Instagram. So of course, follow us on those great social media channels. With that, Ryan, close us out, man.
Wait. Yep. Before Ryan. Oh,
go ahead. Yep.
If it was you not for Bourbon Pursuit, we would not be here and you guys would not be here. So please support these guys because they're awesome. They put a lot of work into this.
Amen. Amen. Thanks, Carrie. Appreciate it.
Truth.
Yes, Carrie. And you guys, please let us know what you want to hear. We know these community roundtables are popular, but what else do you guys want to hear? And we'll bring it to you. So I appreciate you all listening in, and we'll see you next time.